The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Hey, 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 welcome to this week's episode of Riding and Rolling. I am your host, Chris Stevens, and before we go any further, I definitely want to thank you guys for making last week's show the most listened to and downloaded show on the Cold Slither Podcast Network. If you missed last week's show, we did an episode where we got help from our listeners about, you know, what car you should buy for your teenager. You know, for those of you with teenage kids that are 16, 17 years old, have their driver's license, and are itching to get out of your hair, and you are itching to get them out of your hair. But my big brother Classic, who runs the Cold Slither Podcast Network, shot me a message the other day saying, "I looked at your numbers and it is not a fluke. Everybody really listened last week. We got close to 1,000 listens over a 3-day weekend for that one episode." So for you all that listen, download, retweet all the announcements, thank you, thank you, thank you. Really means a lot. We are definitely trying to make this a go-to podcast for, you know, people who like cars, who like to talk about cars. So, and we can only make it as good as you guys' suggestions and listening. So don't be shy. Shoot us an email, ridingandrolling@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at CJ Writes and Thangs. That's TAATHANGS. Yes, that's what I meant to say. And you can also find our show Twitter at Riding and Rolling. No G on the end. But once again, thank you guys for really making last week's show one of the best, probably the best we've done out of the 7 so far. But hopefully episode 8 can keep the party going. Today we're going to talk about, you know, we'll get to news and notes, our feature segment. We will be talking about the revival of the station wagon, hopefully the death of the crossover SUV. And with Jeep dropping a new Wrangler pickup at the beginning of the year, it's only right that we throw it back and, you know, pay homage to another Jeep pickup for the old school ride of the week. So sit back, strap up, hold on tight, and let's go ahead and get it started and start it up with news and notes. This week's news and notes segment is brought to you by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, and cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture such as BB-8, Thumbs Up, Enjoyed Evolution from Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Bernie and Larry 2016, Pretty, Pretty, Pretty Good from Curb Your Enthusiasm, and much more. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to CSPN.US. That's CSPN.US. And then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link, and then click on the Busted Tees banner and shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through CSPN.US. Be sure you do that today so we can keep this party rolling. All right. News and notes time now, and for you classic Chrysler, Dodge, and Plymouth muscle car owners, Chrysler and Mopar have now partnered together so that you can drop a brand new Hemi engine into your old classic Chrysler. This comes from Joel Stocksdale over at Autoblog.com. Thanks to a new kit from Mopar, classic car owners will have an easier time dropping Hemis into their muscle cars. The kit works with Mopar's 345 and 392 Hemi engines, 5.7 and 6.4 liters respectively, with cars built before 1975. The kit will run $1,795 and has everything needed to get one of the above engines running. The parts include a power distribution system, engine computer, engine and chassis wiring harnesses, O2 and air intake, air temperature sensors, ground wiring, and a gas pedal. The kit is also designed to work with a manual transmission, but Mopar says a transmission such as the Torque Flight 727 and the 904 can be made to work with the system. As for examples of the kit in action, you can take a look at the Jeep CJ66 and the Dodge Challenger Shakedown that Mopar revealed at the SEMA show in Las Vegas this week. Mopar also offers a few other parts to help complete the project, including various oil pans to clear subframes, a set of headers, and accessory drives for power steering and air conditioning. All these parts are extra cost, though. You'll also need the engine, of course, and the 345 starts at $6,070, and the 392 runs at $9,335. However, if you already happen to have one of these from 2014 or newer, that'll work too. And this will be pretty cool, you know, for, you know, those of, you know, the old school car set who want to modernize their vehicles but not lose the classic car touch, if you will. Because it's one thing to have an old school car, but if you want to have some of the modern amenities that maybe some of the engines and transmissions and, you know, wiring from the 60s don't have, this is a pretty cool thing by Mopar. And Chevy, of course, is already doing this with Chevrolet Performance. They already sell crate engines with Connect and Cruise kits to get engines working in classic cars. And GM also offers it with more engines. But if you want to keep a Mopar in your Chrysler, Dodge, or Plymouth, or Jeep, it's a cool new option. Very cool. Also, next up, if you happen to be one of the few, the proud, and the very rich that can afford a Ford GT and go racing on a track with it, you'll be able to share that fun on an app. This comes from Pete Bigelow over at Car and Driver. Behind the wheel of a new Ford GT and intent on recording and sharing exploits from a track session with friends, as with everything else nowadays, there will soon be an app for that. As Ford unveiled its new Mustang GT4 race car Tuesday at the SEMA show in Vegas, once again, that's a pretty neat show that, you know, everybody should be watching out for. The company also announced plans to deliver a performance app that allows users to track data, capture video footage, and then share it on their social networks. Drawing information from Ford's Sync 3 infotainment system, the app will provide its users with vehicle performance data integrated with overlays of the course, timing statistics, and virtual gauges. That can be coupled with video captured with the smartphone's built-in camera. Previous systems captured similar information, but it remained embedded in the vehicle. The ability to take their track sessions with them everywhere they go and share their footage and data with friends is a huge benefit of our new app, said Dave Parasak, Global Director of Ford Performance. Ford said the performance app should be available for the most popular smartphone platform sometime in 2017, although a specific date hasn't been set yet. It will first become available on the 2007 Ford GT and eventually migrate to other vehicles and automakers' lineup. That is also pretty cool. The only thing that worries me about that is, how do you take the video? Because you clearly can't be driving a Ford GT and, you know, taking a video at the same time. Unless you want to end up on one of those snuff channels. Because that's the only thing that's going to happen is that you're going to be too busy goofing off trying to take a selfie. And then the next thing you know, your brains are scrambled all over the floor. So I would think, you know, that they would at least, you know, benefit from having a dash mounted gauge or thing that you could put your cell phone in and do all that stuff with. And then, of course, you know, you probably could attach a selfie stick with, you know, hands free. And then there's apparently supposed to be a new camera, a new drone, if you will, that you can put your phone in and it'll hover above you and take the video and the pictures that you want. So I guess if you had a drone quick enough to keep up with the GT4, you could do that as well. But I would just say be very careful, GT drivers, because that doesn't sound too kosher. I mean, it sounds like a great idea, but I think, you know, Ford needs to let everybody know that, you know, this is pretty much a don't try this at home type of situation. And that being said, speaking of don't try this at home, this is from the Black People Don't Do This department. Rally driver bitten by snake, yet he keeps on driving. This comes from Alanis King over at Jalopnik.com. While working on his Ford Fiesta RS during the FIA World Championships Wales Rally in Great Britain on Friday, series co-driver Olaf Flowane believes he was bitten by a snake on the left hand. He didn't realize it at the time that he had been bitten and continued to compete through Saturday with a giant swollen hand. According to the WRC website, Flowane, 47, and driver Mads Osberg stopped Friday to work on the car. In a hurry to get it done, they needed some stones to keep the car from rolling away. Here's what Flowane told the WRC web team. I saw a stone in a dry wall, so I put my hand there and was fighting to get it out. I didn't feel anything. After the stage, I said to Mads that things didn't feel right. I was getting a cramp in my thumb, and it was strange. It was starting to get worse and worse. When we got to Chester, I wasn't feeling well at all, and my hand was so big. Being a three-day event, Flowane still had Saturday and Sunday to compete after he realized he might have been bitten. Flowane thought the swelling would go down overnight before Saturday's rally stages began, but it definitely did not. Here's what Mads Osberg had to say, also from the WRC website. Today, he was strange from the morning. He didn't behave normally. Even in the stages he struggled, he just didn't have any rhythm as he was reading the pace notes, which isn't normal. Osberg said Flowane got worse over the next stage and then admitted he wasn't well. Osberg saw two bite marks on Flowane's hand when checking, and Flowane took anti-inflammatory tablets from a doctor after being checked out Saturday morning. So, let me get this straight. You decided that you've been bitten by a snake. The bite marks are in your hand. Your hand is swelling up faster than anything you've ever seen in your life. And instead of going to a doctor, you say, oh, lad, I'm just going to go ahead and ride it out. We'll just go ahead and finish the stage. What the hell? Let me tell you something. If I ever get bit by a snake, well, I'll let Richard Pryor say it.
And they say you're supposed to be cool, calm, and collected if you get bit by a snake, so the adrenaline does not rush to your heart and kill your ass. How in the fuck you be cool if you get bit by a snake? I know how I'm going to act if I ever get bit by a snake. And if it's on the wide world of sports, I'm going to embarrass every nigga in America. I am not going to be cool. I'm going to have a fit. Oh, dear, we got to be beat up in life.
Era's out of control, brother selling his soul or go gold, going gone, another rapper slow, to pop in R&B, not the MD, I'm strictly hip hop, I stick to kicker free, funk mode, yeah kid, that's how the squad rolls, I know your head is bobbing, cause the neck no,
like other rappers,
putting on their fans, they ill, trying to chill, saying damn it'll be great to sell a mill, that's when the mind switch, to the pop tip,
kid you gonna be large,
yeah right, that's what the company kicks, forget the black crowd, you're whack now, in a zoot suit, front and black, looking mad foul, I speak for the hardcore.
Rugged and raw.
I'm out of here, catch me chilling on my next tour. From the U.S. to the White Cliffs of Dover. Strictly underground funk, keep the crossover.
So, whatever happened to the station wagon, that timeless worldwide mode of transportation for families, for big families with a lot of stuff to carry? Well, the easy answer, of course, is a sport utility vehicle, but a smaller segment of that market, one far more dastardly and lazy, exists as to why station wagons have become persona non grata in the auto industry for the better part of 15 years. That, of course, would be the crossover vehicle. Now, to be fair, station wagons kind of ran their course in the 80s when the big three started making wagons for Ford Escorts, Chevy Cavaliers, and the K-Car, but the bigger wagons served a purpose for a generation of Americans who went on road trips with their families and pets, putting all manner of luggage and travel essentials into the space behind the second seat, which was larger than a few pickups back in the day. But the crossover vehicle is a station wagon masquerading as an SUV, and vice versa. It doesn't have the charm of the station wagon nor the history. Just to give you guys an example, station wagons began in the 1920s, the pre-Great Depression era, as taxis, or hacks as they were called then. Hacks have a different meaning now because now it's a taxi driver that isn't affiliated with any particular company. I don't know if you call Uber or Lyft drivers hacks per se, but, you know, that's what a hack is now, pretty much a freelance cab driver. But back then, hack was the operating term for taxis and taxi drivers. Car companies realized that having an extra row of seats and room to store things in for road trips was ideal. So by the 30s and 40s, you started to see things like all steel wagons and estate wagons and Woodies popping up. And then by the time the 60s and the 70s came around, station wagons became like these land boats. You had Chevy with the Kingswood and the Biscayne model. You had the Ford Country Squire, which had like the faux wood paneling on it, and the Chrysler Town and Country Wagon. And yes, that was a name before Chrysler came out with the minivan in the 1980s, but we're getting ahead of the story. In fact, actually, that's what's up next. Innovation ruled in the 80s, and in 1984, of course, came the minivan from Chrysler, a wonderful vehicle that gave you station wagon comfort with slightly more size, but not as big as a regular van. Crossover developed in the 90s as the SUV boom was popping off, and that sort of, you know, changed things a little bit. It changed the game a lot, because now, you know, people who are kind of unsure about SUVs, you know, in terms of the gas aspect and, you know, needing that much vehicle for, you know, medium to big families, you know, you could get a crossover now. You get something, you know, like a Ford Explorer or a Chevy Blazer, S10 Blazer, mind you, or, you know, even a Dodge Durango, because people forget the Durango started off really small. It was based on the Dakota at first. Now it's like this huge, massive SUV. But, yeah. But that eventually, instead of it becoming just one of the styles that people could choose from, it actually became the style. It took the station wagon completely out of the game, and in some cases, it even passed the minivan in popularity, which I don't get. That's something that just doesn't, you know, that boggles the mind to me, because when you think about it, crossovers, they don't have a charm or a personality. They don't have, you know, any sort of, you know, character to them. I mean, you know, the Jeep Compass, the Honda HR-V, and the now dearly departed Ford Flex, they all serve a purpose. You know, they you put stuff in it, you put your family in it, you go. But they just happen to be another, you know, notch in the parking spot. Another space in the parking lot fills up. There's nothing about those, you know, crossovers that you can sit there and, you know, if you're a car enthusiast, you walk by and say, whoa, is that a Ford Flex? But if you see like a 1967 Chevy, you know, Biscayne, you're going to stop. You're going to say, wow, that thing is huge. And you're going to just look at the lines. You're going to look at the styling. You're going to look at, you know, just, you know, the character and the charm of it and the personality of it. Crossovers don't have that. Even the early minivans had some personality to it. I mean, when Chrysler, you know, put out, you know, Dodge Caravan, the Plymouth Voyager, and the Chrysler Town and Country in the early 80s, they were, you know, unlike anything on the market. Because they were something totally different. Something new. Something fresh. Something that, you know, saved Chrysler in a sense and gave the auto industry something else to create, something else to shoot for. And we'll probably do a minivan segment, you know, at some point, you know, during our show's run. But this is more about the crossover. And to be fair, some companies have tried. Like Cadillac had the CTV wagon in 2010, but they ended up dropping that a couple years ago. Volkswagen is trying to bring it back with the Golf Sport wagon, and it looks pretty cool, and it has the potential to be a big seller. But as long as, you know, companies feel like combining SUV with like minivan comfort is the answer, I think we've probably seen the end of the station wagon as a model that people can go out and create memories in. Hopefully I'm wrong, because as an auto purist at heart, I really just can't vibe with the crossover. It's nothing personal. It's nothing, you know, totally, you know, irrational in my mind. Some people might think I'm being irrational, like, Chris, it's a car. But this is riding and rolling. We take the old school very seriously around here, in case you haven't noticed. So for us, you know, it's just, for this show, it just feels like I just can't get with the crossover. I don't know if that makes me a bad person or if that just makes me, you know, somebody who's stuck in the 70s or an old soul, but I just feel like the station wagon means a lot more to people, you know, of a certain age or of a certain, who have a certain respect for what the car and the automotive industry used to be. When you could create memories in these vehicles, when you could do, you know, different things and go different places, you know, and take family pictures and, you know, take the dog with you and, you know, set up camp and just, you know, live life. And you can do all of this stuff now with a crossover, don't get me wrong, but I don't think the kids of today are going to really, you know, talk about the memories of a Honda CR-V the way their parents and their grandparents, or in some cases their grandparents, are going to talk about, you know, the Chevys, the Fords, the even the AMC wagons, which is an interesting note. You know, I got off track. actually, I'm getting off track a little bit, but just want to say the real first crossover that people really forget about is the AMC Eagle from 1980 to 1988. That we'll probably save for an old school ride a week, because that is a car that really needs an entire segment to itself. But that was like the prototype crossover, the AMC Eagle wagon. We'll talk about that at another time. But once again, I just feel like the station wagon, you know, needs a second chance. It needs another chance to thrive, because it's one thing to, you know, create vehicles that people can, you know, just get from A to B in and do it stylishly, you know, and look good. But you want to create memories with your cars. And that's what I think the automotive industry is missing as a whole. It's okay to create something that's, you know, that looks good, is technologically sound, and, you know, innovative. But where's the charm? Where's the personality? Where's the character? Where's the quirkiness? Where's the lovability? And that's something I think that's missing in the automotive industry. And as long as the station wagon is missing, that's probably what the automotive industry is going to be, you know, missing for a long time.
See, it ain't just a car. It ain't just a wheel. It's a time machine. It's a spaceship. It's precious. You gotta take your time. You can't be rubbing on them curves, hitting them potholes. You gotta ride clean and ride slow. Me and my old ride slow. Get the paint. Slamming these doors. Ride clean. If you ride slow. Get the paint. Slamming these doors. Ride clean.
All right, now it's time for the old school ride of week, and as we said at the top, Jeep is putting out the Wrangler pickup truck, well, the Wrangler base pickup truck that people have been begging for years. But this won't be the first time that Jeep has produced and sold a pickup based on one of its popular off-road models. So it's only right that we throw it back, you know, give a nod to a Jeep-based pickup of a different era, one that needed way more love than it ever really got. And that means this week's old school ride of the week is the Jeep CJ8, also known as the Scrambler. The Scrambler was based on the legendary Jeep CJ7 model, which is the Wrangler's predecessor, and it was introduced for the 1981 model year as pretty much a CJ7 cab with a pickup bed integrated into the body. What made the Scrambler cool was that, much like the Jeeps of any era, you can fold the windshield down, take the roof off, take the doors off, and get yourself a real outdoorsy driving experience, this time in pickup truck form. The Scrambler name comes from a graphics package that, you know, was pretty much, you know, standard on all Scramblers is what I meant to say. That, you know, you get the racing stripes, you get the big bold letters of Scrambler, and you get a special racing wheels to go along with it. And with that being said, the Scrambler, while, you know, in concept was pretty cool, was actually one of the rare commercial failures that Jeep has ever had. And I think it was just, you know, due to the competition factor, because small pickup trucks were really starting to pop off in the early 1980s from Toyota to Nissan and the emergence of the Chevy S10 series and the Ford Ranger. The Scrambler, even for the early 80s, it seemed outdated. And it never really took a foothold in the market, despite that, you know, brand of Jeep toughness and integrity and, you know, off-road fun. Sales dropped every year. The best year for the Scrambler was its beginning year in 1981, when he sold over 8,300. And the last full model year was 1985, and sales had dropped all the way down to a mere 2,000. And there were about 130 leftovers sold in the 1986 model year, but those just happen to be the leftovers, the ones that are, you know, get them out of our sight editions, like, you know, somebody at the Kenosha factory back when Jeep was owned by AMC just took a look around and said, I thought we got rid of the Scrambler thing. Well, we built some extras, but nobody's really taking them on yet. Well, get them the hell out of here. Send them to a museum or something. So that's pretty much the end of the Jeep Scrambler chapter. It was actually replaced by the XJ series-based Jeep Comanche, which was a little more popular because it was a little more modernized than the Scrambler was. But the Scrambler is really a true collector's item for, you know, Jeep freaks out there, because there's only about 16,000 of them. Really ain't a lot to find out there. So, I mean, if you find a Scrambler, be it in poor condition or in mint condition, you'll definitely have to fork over a pretty penny for it, because it's, you know, one of the rarer, you know, models of Jeep that the company has ever produced. And like I said, I just feel like it was a great idea at the time, but when you take into account that Chevy had bigger resources than AMC, Ford had bigger and better resources than AMC, even Toyota and Nissan just had a better idea of, you know, a fun, small, sporty pickup truck that could do the work. Because the Scrambler wasn't about no work. It was all about the play. So that's why Chevy, Ford, and, you know, the imports were able to do well, because they were able to marry that, you know, mixture of fun and business, and the Scrambler was just all about the fun. And not everybody had that luxury in the early 80s. So that is our old school ride of the week. And like I said, if you really, you know, want to set yourself apart from the pack, you know, in terms of, you know, if you're a Jeep collector, if you're a real old school Jeep fan, you go find yourself a Jeep Scrambler. They're hard to find, but you won't be disappointed. Trust me on this. And that being said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to this week's Riding and Rolling episode. Next week, we're probably going to try to, you know, figure out what it is we want to talk about with, you know, auto show season coming up, and talk about, you know, what to look forward to for, you know, the 2018 brand of models. Because, you know, of course, now the model year thing usually begins in January or February instead of, you know, August, September, and October like it used to do back in the day. So we'll probably start looking forward to the future models of, you know, what these car makers and auto manufacturers are going to be trying to put out. So once again, if you really want to reach out to us, don't be afraid to. We have Twitter, Riding and Rolling. Same thing for Facebook, facebook.com/Riding and Rolling. Shoot us an email with a suggestion, or if you know somebody who wants to get on with Old School Ride Week, if they have an old car that they want to talk about, or you have somebody that has an old car that you want to show them some love, shoot us an email, ridingandrolling@gmail.com. Once again, thank you guys for listening, and until next week, y'all be good, or be good at it.